Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'll be reading articles from San Angelo. First, from the San Angelo Standard Times, and then we'll also read articles from the website sanangelolive.com. Here's how we're going to run this today. We'll first begin with articles from the Standard Times, and then we'll run the ones from San Angelo Live. As a given rule, they will be read most recently printed first, and the older articles after that, except in cases where it makes sense to combine a couple of articles because they relate to each other. And usually we read articles from the local papers, especially first up. But today, because of the weather we've been experiencing, we have a couple of Associated Press type articles that we're going to read first. Texas Power Outage Tracker. More than 350,000 outages as winter storm and ice sweep state. By Natalie Nisi Alund, USA Today, as printed in the San Angelo Standard Times, February 2nd. More than 344,000 homes and businesses were without power in Texas on Wednesday as the Lone Star State continued to battle frigid temperatures and freezing rain. In Travis County alone, which houses the state capital of Austin, nearly 176,000 customers, more than a quarter of the energy customers in the county, were without power as of about 6:30 p.m. as the area endured another day of the winter storm. More than 45,000 outages were reported in Williamson County, just north of Austin. Elsewhere, nearly 35,000 customers were without power in Smith County, as well as around 11,000 in Bell County, according to USA Today Network's Power Outage Database. Texas Power Outage Map. As of about 6:30 p.m., more than 350,000 customers across the state did not have power, per outage tracking website, poweroutage.us. Ice storm warning in effect. Ice can cause tree limbs to freeze, snap, and fall on power lines, resulting in mass outages. As of about noon local time, the state's electrical power grid reported plenty of power, and it showed it was operating within normal conditions. Electric Reliability Council of Texas manages the flow of electric power to more than 26 million Texas customers, representing about 90% of the state's electric load. An ice storm warning was in effect until Thursday morning in parts of north and central Texas, with mostly freezing rain and sleet expected in the area, the National Weather Service in Fort Worth warned. The Weather Service warned that significant icing is expected, with accumulations reaching up to 1/2 inch. Some winter storm warnings were set to lift by noon on Wednesday, the Weather Service said. But power outages and tree damage were still likely due to ice in the area, and officials warned that drivers should keep an extra flashlight, food, and water in their vehicles. The Lone Star Freeze of 2021. This isn't the first time Texas has been slammed with freezing rain and mass outages. In February 2021, winter weather brought record freezing temperatures to the state, left 4 million customers without electricity, and almost half the state's 29 million people under boil water advisories. At least 210 people died during the outages and freezing weather. Texas death toll from freeze. Death toll from Texas February snowstorm climbs to 210, state officials say. And in a related article, Governor Greg Abbott says Texas power grid performing very effectively in freezing weather. By Nikki Griswold, Austin American Statesman, published in the San Angelo Standard Times January 31st. Governor Greg Abbott reassured Texans that the power grid is performing very effectively in the sub-freezing temperatures and expected to have adequate generation to meet demand in the coming days during a press conference Tuesday morning, but urged people to stay off the roads as the dangerous icy conditions are expected to worsen over the next 24 to 48 hours. Abbott emphasized that heavy rainfall and potentially even flash flooding are possible through Thursday, which could make driving even more hazardous in the coming days. The governor and other officials Tuesday said Texans should stay home if possible, but outlined how state agencies, including the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Transportation, and the Division of Emergency Management, have mobilized across Texas. ERCOT officials say any power outages are likely local. Abbott on Tuesday pointed to several bills he signed into law last legislative session after the historic winter storm in February 2021 that aimed to make changes to the power grid to ensure that it is reliable even in extreme weather, saying the grid's performance this year is a result of those changes. The power grid has shown that even under extreme conditions, with the population we have right now, the grid is adequate to address our needs. But we also know Texas is the fastest growing state for population. There are more businesses moving here, more people moving here, Governor Abbott said Tuesday. Abbott, who has previously claimed that no additional improvements to the grid are necessary, changed his tone during his recent inauguration speech, saying he wants the Texas legislature to prioritize how to increase power generation for the grid during this legislative session. Bottom line is this, we're not going to end this session without having strategies to make sure that we're able to provide power to the people of this state for the next 40 years, said Abbott. Abbott, as well as the heads of the Public Utility Commission, ERCOT, and the Railroad Commission, all emphasize that any power outages Texans experience are local issues caused by problems like accumulated ice on power lines. The ERCOT grid is not expecting to have any emergency conditions during this event, nor are we expecting a need to ask for power conservations of any Texans. We're forecasting to have more than 10,000 megawatts of generating reserves online throughout the entire week. We expect any outages, as noted before, to be local in nature, said Pablo Vegas, president and CEO of ERCOT. The officials said Texans should contact their local community utility provider if they experience any power or natural gas outages. Winter weather resources for Texans. Warming centers are open and available on a local level. For more winter weather resources, state officials point Texans to tdem.texas.gov. Officials also warned those with portable heaters to use them with caution, out of concern for carbon monoxide poisoning and unintentional fires. If your house loses power and you decide to use a wood-burning or gas-burning appliance, please be very mindful of carbon monoxide exposure and carbon monoxide deaths, said Chief Nim Kidd of the Texas Division of Emergency Management. Those injuries and deaths are preventable during cold weather snaps like this. If you're going to use a gas-burning or wood-burning appliance or a generator inside your home, you've got to make sure there's plenty of ventilation there. Now we'll move on to local articles. San Angelo makes top 10 list of true Western towns of 2023 by Rosanna Frere, published in the San Angelo Standard-Times January 31st. The True West magazine has announced its top 10 true Western towns of 2023, and San Angelo has again found itself on the list for a fifth year in a row, according to a news release from the Chamber of Commerce. Thousands of great towns can be found in the American West, ones that exemplify the spirit and dedication of the pioneers who built and developed them, the release stated. But 10 of them stand out, and there are true Western towns of 2023. According to True West Magazine's February-March 2023 issue, out on newsstands on February 14th. Walt Koenig, president CEO of the Chamber, said they're proud of their Western heritage and all it brings to the San Angelo community. Being recognized as a top 10 true Western town for the fifth year in a row is a great honor, Koenig said. We look forward to welcoming those who come to our community to experience all that is San Angelo. San Angelo has a strong Western heritage and has many reasons it was selected in this year's list. One of the reasons is Fort Concho. In 1867, Fort Concho was established as an army outpost and remains today one of the best preserved Indian Wars fort, according to the release. The fort is just the beginning of the authentic Western experience in San Angelo that led to being recognized as a top 10 true Western town. The Santa Fe Depot was constructed in 1910 and today is home to the Railway Museum of San Angelo. The museum welcomes visitors to experience living history tours from the 1910 era multiple times a week. The San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo, held since 1934, brings more than 150,000 people to the county fairgrounds, the release stated. San Angelo State Park, home to the official state longhorn herd, allows visitors to get an up-close and personal look at the animals. San Angelo's historical beginnings are buried in Western civilization, Mayor Brenda Guntner said. We have been and always will be a town that celebrates and honors that Western culture. This is the 18th year the magazine has presented the annual award. Editors base their selection on criteria, demonstrating how each town has preserved its history through old buildings, museums, and other institutions, events, and promotions of historic resources, the release said. Kinder Morgan Plant and Snyder experiences power failure and explosion by Mateo Rosillas, Lubbock Avalanche Journal, published in the Standard Times February 1st. Early Tuesday morning, Snyder residents heard a boom and saw windows shake as the Kinder Morgan natural gas plant experienced a power outage and an explosion. According to the City of Snyder Emergency Management, calls came in around 6:45 a.m. for an explosion, and fire personnel and emergency crews arrived at the plant. The plant was able to isolate the incident and shut down the facility. In an official statement from the plant provided to the city, all employees were accounted for. At approximately 6:40 a.m. Tuesday, an event occurred in which caused a power outage and damages to our SACROC facility located in Snyder, Texas. Flaring and venting occurred at the facility as a result. All personnel have been accounted for, according to the statement. The company has isolated and shut down the facility, and the area has been secured with the help of emergency responders. A portion of County Road 226 and FM 1611 near the facility have been closed as a precaution. San Angelo Central Principal Bill Waters retiring. Family reaching out to former students for gift by Rosanna Frere, published January 27th. Family and friends of San Angelo Central High School principal Bill Waters are hoping to honor him with the gift upon his announcement this week that he's retiring after 33 years with SAISD. After Waters announced his retirement on Thursday, his daughter, Jordan Waters Webster, posted on the Central High School Facebook page Friday morning, asking for help with a retirement present for her dad. Hey Central students, alumni, and parents, as a retirement present to my dad, we're looking together notes from you, she said. Please email watersfarewell@gmail.com with stories you have, a note about him, what you are up to now, or even if it's just a simple thanks. Just try to keep a secret from him as we want to make this a surprise. Waters' career as an educator has only been with SAISD at Etacon, Glenn, and CHS, according to his retirement announcement. Waters will continue to serve the staff and students of CHS for the remainder of the school year. I will be proud to call the class of 2023 my last graduating class, Waters said. I will always view my 33 years with SAISD as a blessing. Thank you for allowing me to teach you, work with you, work for you, cheer for you, and celebrate you. It has been my honor. Texas gas prices hold steady. Abilene and San Angelo see drop from a week ago. Both Abilene and San Angelo have average prices above $2.90 a gallon. By Greg Jakelowitz, Abilene Reporter News, published in the Standard Times February 2nd. AAA on Thursday reported the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gasoline in Texas is $3.125, down a hair from last week's $3.13. The national average also slipped a bit to $3.498. The price for San Angelo dropped a nickel to $3.07. Prices are higher in Abilene. A local survey showed an average of $3.10, off almost a dime from the week before. In Abilene, the price rose 14 cents to $3.17. It's one of the highest averages in the state. Prices ranged from a few stations hanging on at $2.99 to $3.39 at the Hop Inn on South Treadway Boulevard. Prices across were up and down. The average dropped 8 cents in both El Paso and Corpus Christi, but was up 4 cents on the average in the Fort Worth, Dallas area. Prices per gallon for regular self-serve unleaded. Sources, staff reports, and AAA. Now we're going to transition our readings to articles published by the website San Angelo Live. These articles are generally more hyper-local in focus. Crosswalk sign melts feet away from Cactus Hotel's fabric awnings by Matt Trammell, published February 2nd. A crosswalk sign on Thursday morning melted in front of the historic Cactus Hotel, just steps away from one of its fabric awnings. According to our reporters on scene, at about 10:30 a.m., firefighters with the San Angelo Fire Department were dispatched to the intersection Twig and Oaks for the report of a crosswalk sign that caught on fire. When they arrived, the fire was out, but the sign had melted. There were no injuries and no other property damage reported. The fire was, however, beside the fabric awnings that made news this past week. And then it gives a link to a previous story from several days ago that also relate to the Cactus Hotel. Cactus Crusader, City Commission Shows Favoritism, by Joe Hyde, published January 31st. Zane White, nicknamed the Cactus Crusader in a lawsuit, is on a self-gratifying campaign to force the owner of the Cactus Hotel, 36 East Twig Avenue, to fix the very large Hotel Cactus sign that formerly adorned the building's rooftop. The Crusader made his way to the most recent meeting of the Downtown Historic Review Commission to harass his nemesis, Cactus Hotel owner Lee Pfluger, over his request to get more permanent awning replacements around the former hotel's first floor. The DHRC is a city council-appointed citizen commission that approves renovations that generally impact the aesthetics of structures located inside San Angelo's downtown district. Chairman David Mazur, elected chairman at the January 26th meeting in question, took no time making his preferences known. We will get to Zane White's appearance later. First, citizens should know about the ringer the DHRC puts applicants through to obtain approval for renovating their private property. Under Mazur, the DHRC demanded strict adherence to seemingly subjective standards on projects brought before the commission for approval before construction can begin. The first applicant grilled by Mazur and the commission was subjected to additional tasks in order to obtain approval. The property owner's rendition of how the now dilapidated building, most recently terribly damaged after a vehicle crashed into it, appeared to have an Austin stone facade adorning faux garage doors. The building was a postmodernist representation of the former car dealership building it once was. However, currently, the unsightly building is barricaded with a chain link fence since 2021. "I have some questions. Can I bring it back to the picture?" Mazur demanded. What followed were a series of "My only other concern is" by Mazur, panning the unhistoric appearance, the doors, the windows, and the proper plaster to be applied to the external surfaces. He also complained that the contractor didn't provide paint chips so the commission could approve the paint colors, even though the supplied rendering was in color. The applicant claimed the paint chips were included in the original application, but were not presented at the meeting. The building will be Valley Vending, a game and amusement venue with pool tables, a jukebox, etc. "We're trying to do this on a budget," the building's owner's contractor said in response to Mazur's objections over the size of the faux garage doors, as well as other objections to their design. "My only defense is that the city's permits department, the city-owned historic building that was the former county library next to City Hall, has the same look as our design right now," he said. "That's over 112 or 113 years old, and they did it with historic protocols and everything." Mazur asked for a photo of the old county library. "Can someone at the permits office walk outside and take a photo of it and send it to someone's phone?" The photo never materialized, so the board moved toward approving or disapproving the property owner's plans. "A move that we approve, based on all the condition that by the next meeting, we can see specific paint colors, glass type, and a new design on the light, Commissioner Stacy Elkin said. The conditional approval passed by unanimous vote. Local attorney Jeff Chandler requested that the commission approve the signage that was to be painted on the west wall of his new offices at 210 West Beauregard Avenue. The board chafed over the drawings, claimed the painted wall's image wasn't perfectly centered. They eventually relented and approved the exterior wall sign only if Chandler more perfectly centered the painting's words. The nitpicking seemed to end when the Cactus Hotel's Lee Fluger approached the dais to obtain permission to replace the hotel's canvas awnings with steel. Fluger, expressing his fear of his own mortality, said the canvas awnings will not last long enough after he is gone, and now was the time to replace them with more durable steel awnings. He even showed the commission one awning that was already installed as an example and apparently without DHRC approval. Incorporated into the prepared agenda item for Fluger's approval was a restriction of sorts to rescind a 2016 DHRC approval for a special awning that was to mark the entrance to a basement speakeasy bar. The bar never happened, Fluger said. He was looking for another tenant who may want to make a go at that type of business. But Fluger said the special awning was already approved and he didn't want his new awning request to eliminate his ability to legally build the very special awning for the bar's entrance in the future. After fawning over the new Cactus Hotel's steel awning replacements, the board not only approved the new awnings, but deleted the provision in the motion that would have eliminated the previous approval as Fluger requested. Cactus Crusader Zane White was watching and scratching notes on a yellow legal pad, seated in the audience. As soon as public comments opened up, he called out the commission for the blatant favoritism the board gave Fluger's awning project. In a growling voice, White opened his remarks saying, "I think this last little exchange here is a really good example of checks and balances not being followed through with." Mazur chose to engage with the Cactus Crusader, but almost as soon as he did, two board members, Stacy Elkins and Lisa Wallace, left the dais, breaking the quorum and forcing the meeting to recess. The city cut the recess out of the video of the meeting. But during the recess, a member of city staff confirmed with others in the room that White was that guy. White took the opportunity to reintroduce himself as that guy once the two board members returned and the meeting was called back into order. "I believe in one of the slides there was a picture of a metal awning that I believe is on the building now," White said. "They said they did a sample," Mazur responded. "And where was the authorization for that? They've been up there for a while," White pressed. "It did not come through this board," Mazur answered. "I think you saw that there are things going on at the Cactus Hotel that aren't going on through proper protocol and procedures consistently. There's a long history of it from what I've seen," White said. Then White asked for the photo of the proposed and existing cactus awnings to be displayed. Pointing to them, he called out his opinion of the hypocrisy of the DHRC. "You went meticulously into the background with this other gentleman here about it needs to be consistent with the historical. All of it, over and over. Now, if anybody being here thinks that that awning on the left is consistent, other than it being green, there's nothing consistent. It's triangular. There's nothing consistent about that. It's unsightly. It looks like the outside of a shopping container." In the end, the board unanimously voted to approve Fluger's metal awnings and to remove the language that would have rescinded the special speakeasy awnings previously approved in 2016, practically proving the Cactus Crusader's point about his favoritism. During the open comments at the end of the meeting, the Cactus Crusader returned to the podium to offer an encore recital of his complaints against the city for not enforcing the sign ordinances concerning the dilapidated Hotel Cactus sign, visually in disrepair, high atop the 1928 building owned by Fluger. In November, Fluger won a default judgment in a lawsuit against White for defamation. The court decides how much White must pay Fluger in March, where Pfluger is asking for $1,000 for every person who has heard what Pfluger argued were White's slanderous tirades against him. We'll move on to our next article from San Angelo Live. As you can tell from that article that we just read, the articles from this story, as I said, are hyperlocal, which is good, and they are longer articles. They also are written in a little bit of a different type of way, so just bear that in mind as we continue with these articles. Ice conditions cause crash on Loop 306 by Furniture Row by James Bluey. A major crash occurred Wednesday afternoon on Loop 306 in front of Furniture Row in the icy conditions. San Angelo first responders were called to the 4300 block of Houston Heart near Home Depot for a major vehicle crash around 2:30 p.m. According to law enforcement across radios, the vehicle hit a light pole in the median. San Angelo Fire Department and San Angelo EMS also responded to the crash, and it is unknown if anyone was injured in the crash. Road and conditions continue to be icy and slick due to the winter storm. And our next story takes us to El Dorado and is another vehicle crash story. El Dorado woman killed after crash on icy highway by Matt Trammell, published January 31st. A 45-year-old woman from El Dorado was killed last night after crashing on an icy highway 277. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, on January 30th at around 9:40 p.m., troopers with the Texas DPS were dispatched to U.S. 277, approximately 8 miles north of El Dorado, for the report of a major crash. When they arrived, they discovered a 1997 Chevrolet Silverado 1500 that had struck a tree. Inside of the vehicle, there was only one person. The driver has been identified as Sherry Lynn Taylor, 49, of El Dorado. She was pronounced dead by Justice of the Peace Eddie Howard on the scene. Preliminary investigation by the DPS shows the truck was traveling northbound on U.S. 277. Due to poor driving conditions, mainly icy roads, the driver lost control, entered a side skid, and struck a tree. Trial for defendant accused of murdering Angelo State University professor set to begin. By Matt Trammell, published January 30th. Aberdeenshire, Mississippi. The trial for the man accused of murdering former Angelo State University professor is set to begin next month. As previously reported on December 10th, 2021, Natalie Zan Ryan, 55, of San Angelo, was murdered by her husband in Aberdeenshire. At the time, it was reported that Wayne Frazier, 45, of Aberdeenshire, shot and killed Ryan with a 9mm handgun. According to Aberdeen Live, the trial will begin in late February. Mississippi is a state where the death penalty is used. The last execution for Mississippi occurred on December 14, 2022, and was done by lethal injection. Since her death, Ryan has been honored by Angelo State with the renaming of the school's English department to the Natalie Zan Ryan Department of English and Modern Languages. Possible shooting at San Angelo area apartment by James Boulogne, published January 30th. There was a possible shooting at a San Angelo area apartment complex over the weekend, but investigators are not releasing any information at this time. Around midnight on Sunday, January 29th, San Angelo Live received messages regarding a possible shooting at Sedona Ranch Apartments. San Angelo Live has reached out to the San Angelo Police Department via email and did receive a reply stating that information could not be released due to the nature of how the incident occurred. This story will be updated and we should have more information as it becomes available. Blaine's Pub is closed. Here's why. By Matt Trammell, published January 29th. The bar of your dreams will be closed for the next few days due to plumbing issues. According to the bar's owners, on January 29th, Blaine's Pub will be closed until further notice. Owner Cody Stern confirmed that the issue involved a city sewer line. We will keep you posted on when the bar reopens. Jury Hands Burrito Murder Stiff Sentence by Matt Tramiel, published January 29th. It's official. Convicted murderer Abel Rueda will spend the rest of his life behind bars. As previously reported, from January 23rd to the 27th, the murder trial Abel Rueda was held in Tom Green County. On Friday, January 27th, the jury sentenced Rueda to life in prison for murdering Juan Quintana. The jury deliberated for just over 2 hours before deciding his fate. With a murder, a defendant can be sentenced from 5 to 99 years or life in prison. In this case, Rueda was given the maximum sentence. And I wanted to read that particular article first so you hear the latest news article, which is the sentencing of the defendant. I now want to go back into the earlier articles that this story mentioned that they have written when the trial was going on, for the sake of context. This is from January 25th, Burrito Murder Trial, Quintana's Final Hours. Day 3 of the Abel Rueda murder trial took the jury step by step on how the murder took place. As previously reported, in October 2020, Juan Quintana, 39, of San Angelo, was killed by a shotgun bullet to the chest. His body was found surrounded by burritos the victim had just purchased from the nearby Stripes convenience store. After serving over 2 years awaiting trial, the state of Texas versus Rueda began on Monday. Day 1 was set aside for jury selection. On day 2, the jury heard from the responding officer to the scene, as well as the forensic investigator on the case. Today, however, the jury was shown exactly how the San Angelo Police Department was able to pin the murder on Rueda. Detective Eddie Chavarria with the SAPD took the stand. He explained that on the night of the murder, Rueda and co-defendant Wendy McCleskey had checked out at the Stripes convenience store behind Quintana. Police were able to identify Rueda by the debit card he used at the Stripes. With this information, he was able to backtrack and see everything Rueda had been up to. Quintana's murder happened at around 5:30 a.m. Before the murder, Rueda made a purchase at the Walmart on 29th Street. Detective Chavarria showed evidence that Rueda had purchased a 12-gauge slug rounds from the sporting goods section. District Attorney John Best showed the jury surveillance video of Rueda purchasing the ammo. From there, the detective said that they researched and found Rueda. They found him in late November 2020. By then, Rueda was an inmate in Howard County's jail, but he agreed to provide a jailhouse confession. The jury will be shown this confession after lunch. During this time period, the detective said that they could still not find Rueda's girlfriend, 29-year-old Wendy McCleskey, or the getaway vehicle. The detective will likely shed more light on this after lunch as well. Now we'll move from that story to their next published story. It is the next day, but it seemed to be a quick trial. Abel Rueda found guilty of killing Juan Quintana in burrito murder trial by Matt Tramiel, published January 26th. A Tom Green County jury found Abel Rueda guilty of murdering Juan Quintana following 4 days of testimony Thursday afternoon. As we reported all week, Rueda was on trial for the murder of Juan Quintana. Quintana was murdered back in October 2020. He was shot in the chest with a shotgun on North San Angelo. Throughout the week, the jury has heard testimony from detectives, forensic experts, Rueda's co-defendant Wendy McCleskey, and even a jailhouse confession from Rueda. On January 26th, the closing arguments were given to both sides. For the defense, they told the jury to focus on two critical details. The first is that the jury should not consider Rueda's confession. During this interview, defense attorney Ray Lefesti reminded the jury that Rueda asked for a lawyer on two separate occasions. He says the San Angelo Police Department not providing one or not stopping the interview violated his constitutional rights. The second flaw in the prosecutor's approach was to have Rueda's alleged accomplice, Wendy McCleskey, take the stand, accused Lefesti. He reminded the jury that after Rueda had been arrested in Howard County, she had stolen his car and run off with another man. Lefesti also accused McCleskey of not only lying to officers, but lying on the stand as well. He told the jury that McCleskey is being offered a deferred adjudication plea deal for her testimony. No court documents show that deal as of January 26th. As for the state, District Attorney John Best told the jury, reminded the jury to use common sense when making their decision. He claims that with the evidence provided and the jury's decision-making skills, they should make the right decision and find Rueda guilty. Now the jury will take as long as they need to make a decision. San Angelo Live has reporters in the courtroom, so stay tuned for the verdict. The jury has been found Rueda guilty of murder, it says in a later posting here. We're going to skip to the next article that was published that next day. Jury hears ugly past of convicted murderer, by Matt Trammell, published January 27th. Abel Rueda was found guilty of murder on Thursday, and now the court has moved on to the punishment phase. With that, District Attorney John Best and his assistant District Attorney Joseph Webster showed the jury Rueda has been troubled his entire adult life. Rueda, 33, began his life of crime back in 2008. In August of that year, Rueda was convicted of felony burglary of a habitation in Ector County. After serving time for that, Rueda got back into trouble in Taylor County. He was convicted in 2013 of aggravated assault. There was no deadly weapon used in that assault. This brings us to 2020. Rueda was convicted of murdering Juan Quintana on October 24th, 2020. But while he was on the run, Rueda continued to commit crimes. After fleeing from San Angelo, Rueda went to Howard County. On November 10th, 2020, Big Spring police worked an armed robbery at the Metro PCS phone store. They believed that Rueda was a suspect in that robbery. The following day, November 11th, 2020, Big Spring police were dispatched to the DK gas station for a report of a shooting. The victim told them that he had witnessed Rueda shooting at his car with a black revolver. This not only endangered the victim, but his one-year-old child that was inside the car. Photo evidence was shown to the jury of the bullet hole in the man's headlights. While speaking with the officers at the gas station, the victim spotted Rueda drive by. Police followed him to a home on Settle Street in Big Spring. This would be the final spot that Rueda would see freedom. During the incident, the officers discovered a bag of meth, a meth pipe, $500 that was suspected to be from the robbery, and a black revolver pistol. With this, Rueda was charged with possession of a controlled substance, unlawful possession of a firearm, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Being in jail has not stopped Rueda from committing crimes either. Since being in the Tom Green County Detention Facility, he has picked up two more charges. The first charge came in February 2022. While a jailer was attempting to search Rueda's cell, he allegedly punched the correctional officer in the face. The next charge would come in August 2022. During this incident, COs discovered a shank hidden in Rueda's bed. The shank, which appeared to be made out of a screwdriver, was shown to the jury. On the stand on Friday morning, we heard from the Tom Green County CO that discovered the shank, the responding officer in the Big Spring shooting case, and that officer's supervisor. After the jury hears both sides, it will determine how much time Rueda will get in prison for the murder of Quintana. He's facing 5 to 99 years in prison. And then once again, bringing this to a close, as we read the very most recent article in this series, the jury handed down the sentence of life for that crime. And now we'll move on to this article. Bobcats quarterback Tyler Hill commits to Angelo State, by Ryan Chadwick, published January 28th. San Angelo Central Bobcats standout quarterback Tyler Hill will continue his football career at Angelo State, in a tweet Hill sent out on Saturday morning. Hill says that he's committed to play football for head coach Jeff Gersh and the Rams. Hill was a three-year varsity starter on the Bobcats. Beginning his career as a wide receiver, the talented quarterback switched in the fall of 2021. He immediately found success on the gridiron as he led the Bobcats to two straight playoff appearances. Hill is classified as a true dual-threat quarterback as he can beat defenses through the air, but is most dangerous with his legs. Hill finished his career at Central with 314 completions on 558 attempts, 4,228 passing yards, and 31 touchdowns. He averaged 195 yards passing a game in his 2 years as the starting quarterback. The running quarterback also led the Bobcats in rushing his final 2 seasons, accumulating 2,129 yards rushing at the helm. In 2022 alone, he ran for 1,379 yards on 136 attempts, averaging a whopping 10.1 yards per carry and 20 touchdowns. His 125.4 yards per game also led the Bobcats in 2022. Angelo State is coming off its best season in program history with a perfect 11-0 mark in the regular season and climbing to the ranks of number 2 nationally. The Rams made it to the third round of the playoffs before falling to in-conference rival Colorado School of Mines. The quarterback position is one of the Rams' biggest question marks moving into the 2023 season and beyond. Senior quarterback Zach Bronckhorst is graduating at the end of the school year, so that vacancy must be filled. Hill might have to develop for a year or two before he's handed the reins to this fledgling powerhouse, but with his athletic ability, he should excel. The community of San Angelo is excited for you, Tyler, and we all look forward to watching you play in the future. Tyler Hill and a few others will be signing for National Signing Day on Wednesday, February 1st at 6:30 p.m. at the Central's Turf Room at San Angelo Stadium. Now here's a rather odd story, but again, I want to remind you we're reading this from the news website, sanangelolive.com, and they do cover some unusual angles. City reports topless bar among the cleanest joints in San Angelo, by Matt Trammell, published January 27th. The City of San Angelo's Health Department on Friday released the December 2022 inspection report. Surprisingly, the local topless joint received a perfect score. According to the report, published on January 27th, Desiree's Preferred Gentlemen's Club, 330 West Washington, scored a 100 on their health inspection. A 100 score is perfect when it comes to health inspections. This score is not easy to get as even some restaurants did not make 100. Why does the city have a topless bar on its health inspection list? Drinks are considered food, and Desiree sells plenty of alcohol, according to the City Health Inspector's section on the city website. The City of San Angelo Code of Ordinances defines a food establishment as a food service establishment, a retail food store, a mobile food unit, and or a roadside food vendor. Based on the definition, a food establishment is a place that sells or serves food to the public and does not distinguish between the selling or giving away of food, nor whether the establishment is a profit or nonprofit. Meanwhile, food establishments like certain Sonics and Whataburgers in town scored in the low 90s, while some Starbucks and the Dollar Tree on Great Creek Road were in the 80s. Even Miss Hattie's, 26 East Concho Avenue, owned by Mayor Brenda Gunter, only scored a 94. So we know there is no favoritism offered by the city's health inspectors. Some restaurants that tied with Desiree's are the Angry Cactus, Cork and Pig, and the Wharf. These are among some of the best fine dining establishments in town. And now, thanks to the city inspector, Desiree's Preferred Gentlemen's Club is on the same plank. And as we move on to our next article, this one comes in as I'm refreshing the browser, and this was just published today, this Thursday, February 2nd, as I'm recording this. Congressman Pfluger's Inaugural Student Leadership Conference, by James Beligny. Congressman August Pfluger has announced the first Pfluger Student Leadership Conference that will take place at Angelo State University. On Saturday, February 25th, Angelo State University will host the first annual Pfluger Student Leadership Conference from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the Janelle Center, located on Angelo State's campus. The event will offer students the opportunity to participate in character-building activities and hear powerful messages from dynamic guest speakers while gaining critical knowledge on the fundamentals of leadership. Governor Abbott's Small Business Summit Coming to San Angelo by Yantis Green, published January 25th. Governor Greg Abbott announced Tuesday the statewide 2023 Governor's Small Business Summit. Hosted throughout the state in 15 different cities, including San Angelo, the Governor's Small Business Summit aims to help Texas small business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs reach new heights by connecting them with the resources and information needed to start, strengthen, and grow a business. Small businesses are the very heart of our mighty Texas economy, said Governor Abbott. More than 95% of Texas businesses are small, and they employ nearly half of all working Texans. From our big city centers to our smaller rural communities, the state of Texas is focused on developing an environment where entrepreneurs have the freedom to aspire, grow, and prosper. I look forward to continuing to work with small businesses in every region of the state to ensure they have the tools needed to succeed for an even brighter Texas of tomorrow. The Governor's Small Business Summit offers a variety of sessions, bringing together local, state, and federal resource partners to provide key insights on critical business topics. The summit also provides participants the opportunity to network with other business owners and meet experts who will share timely, relevant, and actionable advice on a multitude of small business topics. The Small Business Development Meeting will be held in San Angelo on October 29th. And before we move to a couple of sports articles, I'll read this political article that was on the front page of the San Angelo Standard Times this past Monday, January 30th. Will Abbott run for president? So far, it's a game of wait and see. Austin. If Governor Greg Abbott is planning to run for president in 2024, he'd probably be running already. At least behind the scenes, Texas governors, by virtue of the national profile they achieve as the leader of the second largest state, and because Texas can be counted on to make both good and bad national news on any given day of the year, are pretty much always in the mix whenever the discussion turns to presidential politics. And it's no different for Abbott, a Republican who this month began his third term as governor and who has an unbroken winning streak in statewide elections that dates back to the 1990s. But even though Abbott's top political aides, and perhaps even the governor himself, acknowledge having at least a glint of interest, there's little evidence on the surface that anyone in the inner circle is putting a laser focus on the groundwork needed to launch a national campaign capable of locking down a major party's nomination for the presidency. Here's what Abbott's chief political strategist, Dave Carney, told reporters about a potential presidential run on the eve of Abbott's third gubernatorial inauguration less than 2 weeks ago. What he's always said is, when the legislative session is over, he will take a look at the situation and see if there's a need for his voice, his experience, to get into the fray, Carney said. But until then, we're not going to New Hampshire or Iowa or South Carolina. A logical comeback would be that those early primaries are still a year away, so what's the big hurry? A logical comeback to that is that when the last Texas governor to actually win the White House was in Abbott's shoes, time frame-wise, he and his political team were already doing every possible thing to send the message to GOP donors, party leaders, party foot soldiers, and reporters with a national platform that if they wanted to get behind a winner, they need to look no further than to the biggest dog in Austin, Texas. It was winter 1999, and then Governor George W. Bush was telling his team he was ready to launch his 2000 campaign. And just as importantly, that team had already been preparing for that launch for about a year or more. The proving ground was the governor's campaign for re-election in 1998 that was so well organized and polished that Bush vacuumed up 69% of the vote at a time when Texas Democrats were still considered competitive. That race became the de facto first Republican primary of the 2000 election cycle. Bush and company were leaving nothing to chance, even though they enjoyed all of the advantages Abbott lacks ahead of 2024. America was quite familiar with his name, given it had already elected one George Bush president. Abbott has a national name ID, but it's not in the same league. Bush had a driven, dedicated, and loyal cadre of lieutenants that, it could be argued, no GOP presidential candidate since has been able to match. And perhaps more importantly, there was no other logical GOP frontrunner in 2000. In a Gallup poll after Gallup poll in 1999 and early 2000, Bush led the Republican field until all the other challengers shriveled and collapsed. By contrast, any Republican in winter 2023 with an eye on 2024 approaches the starting line well behind former President Donald Trump. Even though he's been dinged up quite a bit since his 2020 loss, Trump's shadow remains long and large. Even if he should stumble, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, so far, is positioned as heir apparent among the chattering class. To be fair, Abbott has not been twiddling his thumbs, whether he plans to run for president or not. He's probably Democratic President Joe Biden's loudest critic outside of Washington, and his appearances on Republican-friendly Fox News hammering the administration's immigration policies play quite well with his party's base. In his pre-inaugural chat with reporters, Carney said that any decision on 2024 will follow a very thoughtful approach and would not be made because Abbott is blindly ambitious to run. There are any number of character traits common to people who have become president and people who have tried to become president. Ambition, blind or otherwise, tends to be pretty close to the top of the list. And that article was written by John C. Moritz, who covers Texas government and politics for the USA Today Network in Austin. Now let's move on to a couple of articles related to the sports arena. This is from the SanAngeloLive.com website. Dallas Cowboys Coaching Exodus Begins by James Beligny, published January 26th, Arlington. The Dallas Cowboys are changing up the coaching staff after falling short of the big game in the playoffs. The Dallas Cowboys announced Thursday the team will not renew the contracts of several position coaches. Those coaches include assistant head coach Rob Davis, senior defensive assistant George Edwards, assistant defensive line coach Leon Lett, running backs coach Skip Pete, offensive line coach Joe Philbin, and Kyle Valero, who was part of quality control analytics. The Cowboys did not fire the coaches, but their contracts aren't being renewed. Not only will the coaches have to be replaced, but defensive and offensive coordinator might have to be filled as well. Both Dan Quinn, defensive, and Kellen Moore, offensive, are being interviewed around the NFL for head coaching position. Moore was interviewed by Carolina and Quinn has been interviewed with Denver and Arizona, and Indianapolis have or are going to interview him twice. Also, both had interviews around the league last offseason as well. Both of these coaches leaving would really hurt the Cowboys, as Quinn has won over the defensive guys in the locker room, and Moore has been around quarterback Dak Prescott since he was drafted in 2016. During Prescott's development into an NFL quarterback, Moore and former Cowboy quarterback Mark Sanchez did a lot to help and prepare Prescott. Also, fans are stupid and don't know what they want. All fans care about are results, and when you let fans try and run anything, you get the rise of Skywalker. Over the past couple of seasons, Moore has been a very good offensive coordinator, ranking second and fifth in 2021 and 2022, respectively. When the front office decides to go into a 17-game season with two proven receiving threats, Dalton Schultz and CeeDee Lamb, and its receivers' first year as the number one, it's going to be rough. That's what happened this season. The Cowboys traded away Amari Cooper, let Cedric Wilson leave in free agency, and re-signed Michael Gallup, who was coming off a torn ACL in Week 17 of 2021, even though they knew he wasn't going to be ready until later in the season. Dallas did sign James Washington, but he injured his foot in training camp. The Cowboys also lost Tyron Smith and had to start Tyler Smith, their first-round rookie from 2022, in his place. Also, he did lose Prescott for several games in Week 1. Quinn also has been very successful in Dallas, despite the front office. It helps having one of the best defensive players in the NFL floating the field like Micah Parsons does. The rotation up front helps keep the line fresh, and that seems to work. At linebacker, when Leighton Van Der Esch went down, the Cowboys struggled. At corner, when Anthony Brown was injured, that hurt the Cowboys even more. Turning to Kelvin Joseph caused the Cowboys to look at free agents like Trayvon Mullen and Xavier Rhodes. Even with all the injuries, Quinn still had the defense playing well, and should he leave to be a head coach, expect some assistants to go with him. This could be only the beginning. And we have a really wonderful final article for you, again from the world of sports. This one is local San Angelo sports. Angelo State Athletics adds 5 new members to Hall of Honor by Felix F. Chavez, San Angelo Standard-Times, published January 28th. The Angelo State Athletic Department will induct 5 new members into the Hall of Honor, with the 2022 class featuring Harold Lettett, Kellyanne Goebel, Phil Danaher, Grant Taff, and Ola McCorkle. The induction will take place February 18th, and all the honorees will be recognized at halftime of the Angelo State's men's basketball game, which begins at 3 p.m. Here's a look at the inductees. Harold Lettett, track and field, 1979 to 1981. Lettett is one of 3 Angelo State track and field athletes to have won 3 individual national championships at Angelo State. Lettett won the NAIA indoor title in the shot put in 1980 and 1981, with throws of 59, 8.5, and 60, 11.75, respectively, while also claiming the NAIA outdoor shot put title in 1980 with a mark of 60, 11.5. Lettett was also a 3-time LSC outdoor champion in the shot put, winning the event in 1979, 1980, and 1981. Lettett was a 5-time NAIA All-American for the Rams before. In addition to becoming a member of the Angelo State Hall of Honor, Lettett is also a member of the San Angelo Central High School Athletic Hall of Fame. Kellyanne Goebel, women's basketball, 2001 to 2004. A 4-year starter for the Rambels, Goebel finished with 1,253 career points, which places her 10th on the ASU women's basketball all-time scoring list. During her 4 years as a Rambel guard, she started 112 games. She led the Rambels in total points during the 2001-2002 season, totaling 403 points while earning all Lone Star Conference honors. Goebel helped lead the Rambels to 3 LSC South Division championships in 2001, 2002, and 2003, and 2 outright Lone Star Conference championships in 2002 and 2004, as well as 3 straight NCAA tournament appearances in 2002, 2003, and 2004. She was named Lone Star Conference Academic All-Conference in 2004, and was selected to the commissioner's honor roll twice in her career. Grant Taff, football, 1969 to 1971. Taff spent 3 seasons as the head coach of Ram football, totaling a .633 winning percentage with 19 career wins. The Rams held a winning record in all 3 seasons under Coach Taff, finishing 3rd overall in the 1970 season. After ASU, Taff went on to become the head coach at Baylor University from 1972 to 1992. During his tenure at Baylor, his teams won 2 Southwest Conference football titles in 1974 and 1980. His Baylor teams also appeared in 8 bowl games, and his 128 wins are still the most of any coach in the history of the Baylor football program. After retiring from coaching, Taff became executive director of the American Football Coaches Association in February 1994 and held that position until 2016. Taff is a member of 8 different halls of fame, including his induction into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2001. Phil Danaher, football, 1967 to 1971. Danaher played 2 seasons at Angelo State before beginning his illustrious Texas high school football coaching career. As a player, he recorded one of ASU's highest single-game rushing performances, totaling 173 rushing yards against Northwood in the 1968 season. Danaher spent 48 years as a Texas high school head football coach, including stops at Dilley High School, Hampshire Fannett High School, and Callahan High School in Corpus Christi. Retiring in December of 2021, Danaher finished 38 years of service at Callahan High School with 490 total wins and 28 district titles. While at Callahan, Danaher eclipsed the mark to become the winningest coach in Texas high school football history, earning his record-setting 427th victory in 2016. He served on the Texas High School Coaches Association's Board of Directors from 1991 to 1993. In 2015, Danaher was inducted into the Texas High School Football Hall of Fame. And in 2017, he was awarded the prestigious Tom Landry Award. Ola McCorkle, Athletics. Ola was a fixture at the ASU Physical Education Kinesiology Department during her time on ASU's campus. Ms. Ola, as she was referred to, had a lasting impact on many ASU students and graduates. Her guidance and direction with academic and life matters were instrumental student-athlete success at ASU. When softball was reestablished on campus in 2000, that became McCorkle's passion, and the annual softball tournament is named the George and Ola McCorkle Challenge. In 2008, Ola and her late husband, George, were honored as the ASU Athletics Family of the Year. In addition to the countless hours spent supporting ASU and ASU Athletics, Ola has been an active member of the Wesley Trinity United Methodist Church. Throughout the years, she has accumulated more than 6,500 hours of volunteer service and has helped prepare and serve more than 40,000 meals annually through the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.